The views expressed on the following program are the views of the show's host and do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station, their management, their donors, their underwriters, nor their seventh-born sons. Broadcasting from our secret underground studio in Olympia, Washington, it is time for the Thunderbolts. Yes, kids, there you were, enjoying your privileged white status, blissfully ignorant of the fact that your shoes were manufactured by a child slave, until one day you turned on your radio and you were struck by the Thunderbolt! Hello, Cascadia! It's time to wake up! Yes, you better grab that cup of coffee, because you are about to be struck by the thunderbolt of truth and justice. Here it comes. Yes, kids, the thunderbolt is your guide to activism in Thurston County. I have news. I have commentary, I have a calendar for activist-related events, kick-ass music, and dumb jokes! So Cascadia is off of the couch and into the streets! It's time to save civilization from fiery apocalypse! Though even the apocalypse is gonna have to wait until I have had a cup of coffee!
Office of Emergency Management for the State of Michigan with another tip for saving money in your city.
When you cut maintenance funds to your schools, the rats get in, and their cost benefits will amaze you. Rats, especially big rats, raise the overall population of a school while demanding no educational resources. They also grow to maturity much faster than human children, ensuring an accelerated graduation rate. Finally, rats require no cafeteria services and are just happy to eat wires.
That's another money-saving tip from the Office of Emergency Management for the State of Michigan. Remember, we don't just value your children. We calculate their value down to the penny.
Hello, and welcome to the Thunderbolt for March 19th, 2021. I have a personal confession to make this week, as I'm afraid that I indulged during the weather we've been having recently. And while I almost have a new show ready, well, as they say, almost only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades. Therefore, I must dig through the archives to put together a show for you this week. But fortunately, I have a whole bunch of years' worth of archives to go through in order to do that. And to make up for not having a new show this week, I have chosen a very special set of thunderbolts with which to blast your view of reality. These are all pieces that I recorded back in 2014. Enjoy! I recently reported that Jeff Bezos built Amazon by deploying ruthless cutthroat methods and undercutting everyone else's prices and paying no sales taxes and putting local retailers out of business all over the country. I reported that he operated literal sweatshops with horrendous working conditions for his workers right here in the United States. And that he had both purchased the Washington Post as a propaganda outlet, and that he had almost simultaneously inked a $600 million contract with the Central Intelligence Agency. Well, there's new news to report from the Jeff Bezos front. And this is a real shocker, kids. Bezos has revealed that Amazon has a secret laboratory in Seattle where he claims that over the last few months, Amazon has worked through and developed an eighth generation of drones that can carry 5-pound packages through the sky at 50 miles per hour, and he is now asking permission of the FAA to unleash them.
Jeez. Another day, another crisis. Oh well. Time once again to gird our loins and go into the breach to do some battle and to kick some serious ass.
Now, the most amazing thing about the coverage of this event is that it is barely there. And what is there seems to be accepting this as some sort of novelty or joke or something. Ironically, the most extensive coverage I could find was on the local Seattle weekly, The Stranger. A few things you should know about this. There was recently a Seattle woman who spotted a tiny drone hovering just outside her bedroom window as she was changing. And Ms. Surveillance State herself, Senator Dianne Feinstein of California, spotted a drone inches from her face just outside her window. A woman in Sydney, Australia, recently found a drone hovering just outside her kitchen window, and the police explained that it was a real estate agent drone. A real estate agent drone? That's just what we needed! And now, after all that, the mad scientist Jeff Bezos announces that he has been developing several generations of drones in a secret undercover laboratory in Seattle, and he is now ready to unleash his swarm of drones into our skies. All of this coming shortly after inking his $600 million contract with the Central Intelligence Agency. Really? Does that completely creep out anyone besides me? This seems like the plot of a very bad B-grade movie. Except this is for real. So a few weeks ago, I pointed out that the political inspiration for the libertarian wing of the right wing, Ayn Rand, was a totalitarian, a sociopath, and an atheist. I also mentioned last week that it is now becoming déclassé to dehumanize homeless people. Well, there has been another development related to both of those things. Yes, kids, we are witnessing the birth of the homeless Jesus. I have considered one of the great ironies of our age to be the fact that the spiritual inspiration for the right wing, Jesus, was a homeless, far-left, radical revolutionary who, were he to appear today, would probably be classified as a terrorist and renditioned to a secret black site where he would be tortured by the CIA. Especially if he were to start throwing over the tables over at Goldman Sachs. Anyway, a local church in a wealthy community in North Carolina has unleashed a controversy by unveiling a statue that depicts Jesus as he actually was.
Oh,
He is homeless and sleeping on a park bench.
They have built him an altar in the evening dews and dance.
He is covered in a blanket.
By the dim and flaring lamps.
Only his feet, complete with nail holes, are showing. Somebody has already called the police once to report the statue for sleeping on the bench. Others are coming along, they're sitting on the bench, and they're laying their hands on the exposed feet as they pray. Watching right-wingers try to spin this is truly hilarious, kids. Here is one of the more ironic responses. My complaint is not about the art worthiness or the meaning. It's about people driving into our beautiful, reasonably upscale neighborhood and seeing an ugly, homeless person sleeping on a park bench. Yes, we need to keep ugly, homeless people out of reasonably upscale neighborhoods and make sure they stay in their proper place, even if they are the Son of God. If Jesus is planning on a comeback, then somebody had better warn him that Olympia now has a sit lie ordinance and that he would not be welcome here. Yes, in Olympia, we have taken our stand. Indeed, he would be arrested if he tried any of that ugly homeless person crap in our town. So be on the lookout for the Son of Man. Coming soon to a park bench near you. The future or not? I think that the saddest thing about the machine burning up our world is the potential that will be wasted on all of these useless and artificially created problems. Humanity is on the verge of numerous truly revolutionary discoveries and technological breakthroughs, but we will never see these if our civilization collapses. So I've been pushing hard for a long time on the meme that the only way to fix our culture is to fix the people. I am convinced that attempting political solutions without fixing the underlying social disease is not only useless, but counterproductive. The system is merely a reflection of the people, not vice versa. The complete moral bankruptcy of our financial and governmental systems is a symptom. It is not the disease. For many decades now, every aspect of our view of reality has been manipulated by some very nasty people for their own benefit. They have intentionally isolated us. They have intentionally dehumanized us. They have taught us to dehumanize others. They have convinced us that our worth is determined by our bottom line rather than by who we are. Our worth is determined by our bank book rather than by our character. They have intentionally made us utterly dependent upon their machine for our survival. They loot our public treasury with impunity, and when they rape you, they say it was your own fault. They mass murder families, and they start wars for profit. And as a result of their manipulations, our culture no longer has a moral compass. When it comes to others or foreigners or criminals or even people we don't really like, we lack compassion or empathy or any of the other basic human qualities that makes our living together even possible, much less pleasant. Our country is angry and vengeful, and it wants to kill. Yes, kids? They have taught us to hate. So besides being a necessary component for our future survival, the reestablishment of an ethical framework is also necessary because scientific and technological breakthroughs are about to place some very powerful stuff into humanity's grasp. And the thought of this gang of sociopathic murderers that are currently running our world having access to the kinds of tech that is coming through the pipe right now is truly epically scary. Here is just one of the astounding and game-changing things that are happening. Scientists have figured out how to transform information into DNA and then read it back again. Now, since DNA takes almost no space at all, then this means that if they work this out, then we will be able to carry around a nearly infinite information storage capacity in a container you could carry under your fingernail. The only problem with that technology right now is that it costs about $12,000 per megabyte to transform data into DNA, and then it costs about $220 per megabyte to read it back. Once they make this cost effective, though, then you should look out. And here are some of the other things they're up to these days. They are mapping the human brain. They are learning how to implant memories into a brain. They are learning how to read other people's memories directly from their brains. Quantum computing is coming. Who knows? Maybe they'll finally let us have the Tesla machine. Yes, a lot of things they are figuring out are very scary powerful, which just makes it all the more imperative that we clean up and fix the moral and ethical sewer in which our culture has been immersed. And that is the missing link we need to establish if we want to have a future. We need to instill a sense of responsibility for and a sense of kinship with the rest of humanity, rather than viewing other people as expendable commodities to be disposed of in whatever manner produces the most profit. Rather than me and you, we need to become us. We need to become all that we can be. Yes, kids, my ultimate goal is a society where everyone is capable of achieving whatever they are capable of achieving. We absolutely cannot let people such as the ones that are currently running our world to wield the kind of power that our technology and our knowledge is about to impart to our species. So what we need, literally, kids, is power to the people. In a ruling that directly affects only the few hundred Americans, and I use the term Americans lightly here, I mean those few hundred Americans who can afford to spend millions of dollars on political campaigns.
They held their heads with laughs of pain. They learned from men who just refrained from letting out a mirror's pain. Seven screaming Ghostbusters.
The Supreme Court has just ruled that we are infringing upon the constitutional rights of these few hundred people by limiting their ability to purchase our government. Thus, in their wise benevolence, the Supremes just removed most of the few remaining captured shards of laws meant to prevent them from purchasing our government.
This time of year, when stars be crossed, about to really feel, you don't suppose I'd prove surprised?
Now, both Senators Bernie Sanders and John McCain,
seven screaming disbusters.
who, providing evidence for the stop-clock theory, is on the right side of this issue and favors campaign finance reform, they generously believe that the Supreme Court is making these decisions out of naivety. I find myself wondering instead if Senators Sanders and McCain are really that naive. Since I don't have to worry about political calculation, then unlike Senator Sanders and McCain, I tend to be rather ungenerous when it comes to the fascists. And since I'm not a politician, I don't have private views that are the opposite of my expressed public views. So they'll not rile my brain. I'm a revealer, which means still I'll tell. Here are the facts. The fact is that all five of the reactionary Supreme Court justices are ex-corporate lawyers. The fact is that all five of the reactionary Supreme Court justices are members of the Federalist Society. And the fact is that the Federalist Society is a front organization for Wall Street. The Federalist Society has been packing the federal courts for decades, i.e. throughout the administrations of Reagan and both the Bushes, or for 28 years between 1980 and 2008, i.e. every time Republicans have been in the White House for the last 34 years. Now, Michael Avery, who is a professor at the Suffolk University Law School, and Danielle McLaughlin, an associate at the law firm Nixon Peabody, studied the Federalist Society, and they estimate that over 45,000 lawyers and law students are involved in society activities. According to Avery and McLaughlin, every single federal judge appointed by the two presidents Bush was either a member or approved by members of the society. Now, this includes Antonin Scalia, Clarence Thomas, John Roberts, and Samuel Alito. Therefore, I think all five of the reactionary Supreme Court justices suffer no illusions at all. I think that all five of the reactionary Supreme Court justices are part of a decades-long right-wing conspiracy to pack the federal courts with fascists, and that all five of the reactionary Supreme Court justices are fully conscious co-conspirators in Wall Street's takeover of our government. This is in everyone's face, and a lot of people have been figuring all of this out lately. Do Senators Sanders and McCain really think that the Supreme Court justices are more naive than most of the common drunks down at the corner bar? No, I'm thinking those bad boys is partying hardy tonight. You know, the fascists do have one vulnerability. Like all vampires, they can't stand the light.
Can't stand the light. Oh no, it's too bright. It's much too bright. Oh no.
got to burn the night. We got to shine a light from above, or they're going to come crawling out from the darkness below. So I tend to think that God and Satan are metaphors rather than actual beings. But I know whose altar the fascists worship at.
I can't stand it now. Not talking about the light above, I'm talking about the hellfire down below. That's right, that's a Lucifer light. I said I'm talking about Lucifer. L-U-C-I-F-E-R, I spell it Lucifer.
The wielder right. of the dark light.
I know Lucifer so well, I can call him by his first name.
What do you call him?
I said I call him, hey Lou.
And if he don't answer?
I said, hey Lou, lover boy.
He don't mean Reed.
He's gonna come and take you away.
Take you.
Take you away.
Take you.
Oh,
no! Bring your friend to our party, huh? It is time to wake up and do something, people. Or you are going to wake up one day soon, wondering where you are going, and wondering why you're in a handbasket. Time for a quick station break. The Thunderbolt will return in just a moment. The views expressed on this program are strictly those of the show's producers and do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station nor anyone associated with this radio station. And now, back to the Thunderbolt. This is the legend of Erraticus. I recently poked gentle fun at people who suffer ophidiophobia, or a fear of snakes. I did this as I forced them to consider the reality of a snake that can glide through the air as it hunts its prey. Now, this was not gratuitous. I have found that once people learn more about a species, then they tend to think more highly of them. And as far as flying snakes goes, who was the first snake to even come up with that idea? And how many tries did it take before the first snake worked it out? Now that takes determination. Well, the Thunderbolt is once again going to mine the treasures of Mother Nature this week. For over the last couple of months, I have received some serious schooling from a rat. Now, I moved into a little 100-square-foot plastic house inside my daughter's garage just before Christmas. For the first month, I thought that I was sharing the garage with both a mouse and a mole. The mole theory came about when a friend said that she had seen a mole coming out of a hole right next to the garage. And the only glimpse that I had ever had of my roommate was a very brief glimpse of its ass as it disappeared into a crack. Now, I didn't know what it was, but I knew it was a lot bigger than a mouse. And also, since it once carried away an entire loaf of bread, then I knew no mouse could do that. And so, it took me almost a month to figure out that I was, instead, living with a rather large rat. Now, the fact that it took me a month of living in very close quarters with him before even figuring out what he was is itself a clue as to what I was dealing with here. Now, I lived in a school bus for 28 years, and mice used to set up housekeeping in my school bus with fair regularity. But all I needed to do was to set out a 5-gallon bucket with some peanut butter in the bottom at night. The mice would go into the bucket for the peanut butter, and then they were unable to get back out. I'd get up in the morning and take them wherever I thought they might be able to get by, and I would dump them out. And I wouldn't even mind living with mice if they would just stop crapping all over my dishes and my food. However, I have never before lived with a rat. Therefore, I have no gauge with which to measure the level of intelligence that the rat species possesses as a whole. But as for this particular rat, if he is any indication of typical rat intelligence, then I am surprised they haven't taken over the world. I began serious attempts at eviction when he started chewing on my Bose speaker wires, and thus began an epic battle of wits with the creature that has now lasted for nearly 2 months. And I must now admit that this battle has turned out to be like Wile E. Coyote trying to catch the Roadrunner. Not only that, but I must now admit defeat. The rat has won. Not only that, but he has also won my admiration and respect. And I now officially surrender. I'm going to start feeding him just to try to keep him out of my other stuff. So here is a brief synopsis of the critical events in this epic tale. The peanut butter in the bucket trick did not work. Upon awakening, I found the bucket free of both peanut butter and rodents. Next, I tied a piece of cheese to a stick that was itself rather precariously holding up a box that would fall if the stick was disturbed in any manner. The next morning, everything was just as I left it, including the rope leading to the little slipknot that had been tied to the cheese, except the cheese was gone. Now, still thinking I was dealing with a mouse, I went to the hardware store and I bought a small plastic tray filled with a sticky substance. You place the bait in the middle of the tray and, in theory, the mouse gets stuck. Now, while this trick did not work either, it did provide me with my first opportunity to actually see my foe in the fur. For upon hearing a commotion and investigating the matter, rather than espying a cute little mouse stuck in a plastic tray, I saw instead a rather large rat walking around, barely inconvenienced by the little plastic tray that was stuck to his foot. As soon as I appeared, the rat ran into a crack. Now, the plastic tray would not fit into the crack, and he briefly got stuck, and I moved in to grab him. But the edges of the crack provided the leverage that the rat needed to pull his foot out of the tray, whereupon he disappeared with great alacrity into the wild, unknown mazes contained within the mountain of boxes that reside inside of my daughter's garage. So I went back to the hardware store, and I learned that there was also a rat version of the same idea with a much larger tray and much more glue. The next morning, I found the tray lying next to the nearest crack, and the only thing left in the tray was the rat's little paw prints. So next, I tried a combination hat trick. I set the sticky tray under a box that was precariously balancing on a stick. Now, since I knew that the rat needed leverage to get the tray off, then I figured there was no way he could get that big plastic tray out from under the box without hitting the stick and thus knocking the box down. But alas, the next morning, my box was still propped up, but the tray was lying empty next to the nearest crack. I measured the clearances, and there was barely room to slide the tray from under the box without hitting the stick. It was almost as if the rat understood what the stick was for. That was it. I was out of ideas. The only choice I saw now was to deploy lethal means. I really didn't want to, and I felt really bad about it, but chewing my speaker wires is completely unacceptable behavior in a roommate, and I wasn't going to sacrifice a $250 speaker system purchased back in the days when I had disposable income, which days seem unlikely ever to return. I wasn't going to sacrifice that for a frigging rat, no matter how smart he was. So I went to the hardware store and I purchased the extra jumbo rat-sized snap trap with the deadly spring-loaded bar that usually catches them right across the neck, killing them instantly. The next day I set the trap. About an hour later, I heard a snap. I went out into the garage and saw the trap with a seemingly dead rat attached. But then, to my great consternation, the rat wiggled around for a couple of seconds and went still again.
Ooh-yah! Ooh-yah!
Crap. Yeah, I moved in and saw that Raticus. Yes, Sherry named him when she heard the story. Had almost gotten away with it again. In fact, I discovered that Raticus had lost, literally, by a nose. In fact, I am afraid that Raticus has lost his nose. He wiggled again when he saw me, but he went still as I slid a piece of cardboard under him. Keeping one hand on the trap to make absolutely sure that he couldn't get away, I took him two blocks away to the back of a very large schoolyard with several houses and garages nearby. When I released him from the trap, he just lay there. I left. It was raining. I felt really bad. I wondered about the survival odds for a rat without a nose. So I went back 10 minutes later to check on him, and he was gone. I felt lost. There was an empty space in the garage now. I began recalling now fond memories of Raticus's genius at making me look like an idiot.
All along me I see wastes that are faces smiling in the gloom.
But then the rat came back.
Roll up, roll down, feeling unwound, step into the viewing room.
I saw the telltale curtain wiggle that happens whenever he uses one of his pathways behind my desk.
You're in the play.
Here's your ID, ideal for identifying one and all.
The peanut butter I set out was gone within minutes.
Invest your life in the memory bank, ours the interest, and we thank you.
Wow. He crossed two streets and ran a gauntlet of cats to get back here.
The ice cream lady went to draws to see you in the passion play.
I am done. I bow in true respect before my better, and I offer to him my sword in unconditional surrender. Yes, kids, me and Raticus are now buds. I'm moving out of here at the end of the month anyway, so Raticus is welcome to it. Raticus is much quieter and much less active now. He has been through a traumatic experience, and he is seriously injured. He is probably crippled for life. His sacrifice, though, has taught me some important things about the sanctity of life. And I hope he is now teaching some of you some important things about similar things. I don't think there are very many rats who have ever accomplished that feat. least then, Radicus did not lose his nose completely in vain, says I in a transparent attempt at assuaging guilt. Radicus just had some organic peanut butter for breakfast. I honestly wish him the best. Sorry about the nose, dude. Just please quit chewing on my speaker wires.
So for last week's music feature, I featured an Olympia artist. This week, I have some Tacoma artists. This is the Fun Police. Enjoy.
Bye. store. Goodbye to my collection of jazz sets. Goodbye to my action figures. Goodbye, you little G.I. Joes. I'm gonna have to let you off. Go, goodnight, my love. Don't mind my wife. I'll buy you all hell in the next life. Goodnight, my love. Don't mind my wife. I'll buy you all hell in the next life.
That was a temporary lapse of sanity, in more ways than one. Before that, we had Barfly. Before that, we had eBay. And we started that set off with Gringo Meringue. All of those tunes from Tacoma's Fun Police. And I don't know if they're still around. This music's from a few years ago, but maybe they are. They are. I hope they're still having fun. And so that's it for this week. Hope to see you next week. Please keep in mind that the views expressed on the Thunderbolt are those of the show's host and do not necessarily reflect the views of this radio station or anyone associated with this radio station. The Thunderbolt website is dana98501.wordpress.com. 98501 is the downtown Olympia zip code, if that helps you remember that. And you can contribute to the Thunderbolt cause at patreon.com/thethunderbolt. Glad you joined us this week. We hope to see you next week. And in the meanwhile...
Thank you very much.